Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service. My name is Sulima Malson. My pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader this morning. Thank you for joining us as we begin our fourth month of what looks like a long relationship with the global pandemic known as COVID-19. Today we celebrate Pride without a parade, and we share in the massive sorrow and the sparks of hope that have followed the brutal death of George Floyd and the powerful response it has brought forth across the country and around the world. Whoever and wherever you are at this moment, know that you are welcome here. Regardless of your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, regardless of how you identify your gender, if you do, and regardless of whom you love or whatever your spiritual practices may be, this morning we are all local to a virtual community of conscience and compassion. As our minister, the Reverend Tracy Springberry, lights the chalice, symbol of our shared and scattered faith, let us hold in our hearts the seven principles that guide us as Unitarian Universalists, especially during these transformative times. 1. The inherent worth and dignity of every person. 2. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. 3. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. 4. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. 5. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and society at large. 6. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
My name is Wendy Kloos, and my pronouns are she and her. Our opening words come from a book of poetry titled Take Me With You by American poet Andrea Gibson. Gibson is known for their spoken word poetry and tours regularly around the U.S., speaking out on gender norms, social reform, politics, and the struggles of LGBTQ people. Just recently, they posted this on social media. Even when the truth isn't hopeful, the telling of it is. From Take Me With You. That I commit to a life of opening and learning, that I commit to learning at a speed that is vigilant and awake, that I commit to knowing where my empathies lean and why they lean there, that I become increasingly familiar with the why of what raises my voice, that I become increasingly familiar with the why of what lulls me to silence, that I be haunted by the ghosts of who my silences have harmed, that I acknowledge that haunting is not an unkindness, that I acknowledge that haunting is love, that I trust love lives in whatever points at the dark, that I acknowledge that shame is rarely the seed of compassion, that I acknowledge shame would likely be my laziest gesture, that I stop denying I am a whole person, and my wholeness is often unlovable, and my wholeness is often lovable, that I own the possibility that there isn't a thing one could say about the person I am that I could wholeheartedly deny, all of it, yes, all of the ugly, yes, all of the beauty, yes, I have failed and will continue to fail. I have loved and will continue to love I am committed to learning and opening. I want people around me who are committed to learning and opening. People who are failing and loving. People who are stalking their own vigilance. The speed of their own compassion. Saying faster, faster, faster.
My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him. Of History and Hope by Miller Williams. We have memorized America, how it was born, and who we have been and where. In ceremonies in silence, we say the words, telling the stories, singing the old songs. We like the places they take us. Mostly, we do. The great and all the anonymous dead are there. We know the sound of all the sounds we brought. The rich taste of it is on our tongues. But where are we going to be? And why? And who? The disenfranchised dead want to know. We mean to be the people we meant to be, to keep on going where we meant to go. But how do we fashion the future? Who can say how except in the minds of those who will call it now? The children, and how does our garden grow? With waving hands, oh, rarely in a row, and flowering faces and brambles that we can no longer allow. Who were many people coming together cannot become one people falling apart. Who dreamed for every child an even chance cannot let luck alone turn doorknobs or not. Whose law was never so much of the hand as the head cannot let chaos make its way to the heart. Who've been learning struggle from teacher to child cannot let ignorance spread itself like rot. We know what we have done and what we have said and how we have grown degree by slow degree, believing ourselves towards all we have tried to become, just and compassionate, equal, able, and free. All this in the hands of children, eyes already set on a land we can visit, we can never can visit. It isn't there yet. But looking through their eyes, we can see what our long gift to them may come to be, if we can truly remember. They will not forget.
Our reading for today is by Audre Lorde, who is a tremendous spiritual ancestor for many of us, and described herself as a Black mother lesbian warrior poet. She was also a survivor of cancer and a tremendous disability activist. This is her poem, A Litany for Survival. For those of us who live at the shoreline, standing upon the constant edges of decision, crucial and alone, for those of us who cannot indulge the passing dreams of choice, who love in doorways coming and going between dawns, looking inward and outward at once before and after, seeking a now that can breed futures like bread in our children's mouths, so their dreams will not reflect the death of ours. For those of us who were imprinted with fear, like a faint line in the center of our foreheads, learning to be afraid with our mother's milk. For by this weapon, this illusion of some safety to be found, the heavy-footed hoped to silence us. For all of us, this instant and this triumph, we were never meant to survive. And when the sun rises, we are afraid it might not remain. And when the sun sets, we are afraid it might not return in the morning. When our stomachs are full, we are afraid of indigestion. When our stomachs are empty, we are afraid we may never eat again. When we are afraid, when we are loved, we are afraid love will vanish. When we are alone, we are afraid love will never return. And when we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. The sermon I offer for you today is called Why Pride? Why Now? Why Pride? Why Now? As Audre Lorde said in the poem I just read, as she said, as she stood at the crossroads of identity, at the intersections of identity over and over again. As she wrote, it is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. It is better to speak. And so I bring pride to you today. Pride and joy. Joy at the edges of things, where queer people and other oppressed folks have always had to find it. The delight and insouciance of foolish young people and other people who are willing to take a chance on a tiny sliver of joy. Today I bring pride to you that gives rise to rebellion. And rebellion, my friends, that gives rise to change. Pride Month is a celebration, as you know. It celebrates the shape-shifting, the glitter and leather-wearing, the people in between, the people on the edge. It is joyful children nowadays of many genders dancing in the streets, all wearing tutus. And having a great time, because who doesn't love a bunch of grown-ups in costumes with rainbows? It is drag queens and gym bunnies. It is dykes on bikes and radical fairies. It is P-flag families and lots of UUs out in support and pride for ourselves and our shared faith. And in some cities, there's Black Pride and Dyke Pride and Trans Pride, as well as celebrations of the whole LGBTQIA community. It is a month of celebration. Celebration. I find my celebration this week must be found at the edge of things. It is a celebration of struggle in the face of ignorance, bias, murder, and every other weapon the forces of oppression have at their disposal. So I consider LGBTQIA pride for white people and for Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. I can't ignore what is happening in the world, in our nation, and in our own city. I cannot ignore what you already know, that on May 25th, white police officer Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd with a knee pressing into his throat while fellow officers stood by and watched. All of the officers are facing charges that could lead to each of them serving up to 40 years. None of those years will bring George Floyd back. I cannot ignore the blood of Black people killed in their homes, on the streets, and through the ravages of healthcare systems, that blood that cries out from the ground. Nothing will bring those people back. I cannot ignore the lives and deaths of Black and brown trans women in particular, the most vulnerable to beatings, murders, and HIV transmission still. And trans men, vulnerable on the street, often vulnerable to discovery. Black trans men like Tony McDade, shot by police. Criminal findings will not bring them back. And meanwhile, Indigenous women disappear more frequently, disappear and are rarely looked for. Meanwhile, brown people at both our northern and southern borders are detained, held in custody for indefinite periods of time. Young Latinx femmes literally tear their clothes to make flowers to put in their hair. Femmes making beauty in the face of despair. But nothing will bring their childhoods back. And meanwhile, COVID-19 takes the lives of poor people disproportionately, Black people disproportionately, and it takes outrage, anger, and the raised voices of thousands before other people, before white people, care about this. How do I write about pride when all of this is happening? How do I dare? How do I find joy at the edges? How can I preach to you about pride? As I considered these things, I thought of the great orator and abolitionist, Frederick Douglass, and his most famous speech, which he gave in 1857. His words cut like a blade through layers of lies, hidden myths of supremacy, and the ignorance of unconscious bias. Here's what he says. The whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggle. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Let me say that again. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom, he says, and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one. It may be a physical one. And it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them, and these will continue until they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. That's what Frederick Douglass had to say. Injustice expands to fill the space that is left for it. And so we must struggle, we must resist with words or blows or both. Look at the history of change that has moved our nation forward if we think about moral struggle and words and blows. Look at the battles lost along the way to wars that were won, or progress, at least, that was made. The abolition of slavery came about not only through oration and persuasion. It came about through the long struggle of seemingly failed rebellions and ultimately a terrible civil war. Not only was the Voting Rights Act signed into law, but it was done so 6 days after the uprisings following the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., one of the black leaders of the civil rights movement of the mid-20th century. Not only did the Minneapolis City Council just pass a veto-proof vote to abolish the police bureau and develop other ways of responding to citizens in distress, but they did so after nationwide uprisings following the murder of George Floyd. Not only are all these things true, but there is, of course, another uprising around which liberation has turned. Stonewall. While one may mark the beginning of queer pride at many places, I will celebrate it 2 weeks from today, on June 28th, the anniversary of the night the Stonewall Uprising began. In 1969, most of the bars that catered to queer people or allowed lesbian and gay, transsexual, as they were then called, people, most of the bars that catered to anyone who diverged from the gender norm, who diverged from norms of sexuality, almost all those bars were run by the mafia in New York City. The mob didn't care where the money came from, and they kept records of who frequented their establishments because, after all, you never know when a little blackmail might be useful. Mafiosos paid off the police so that staff in the bars would be tipped off if a raid was coming. But on June 28th, somewhat after 1 a.m. in 1969, white police raided Stonewall, the Stonewall Inn, ostensibly a private club. The usual tip-off hadn't come, and so neither the staff nor the patrons were prepared. And that night, for one of the first times, the customers of the club refused to comply with police commands. Raymond Castro, a Latinx person who grew up in Harlem, was at Stonewall from the beginning of the uprising. "All I know," he says, "is enough was enough. You had to fight for your rights. And I'm happy to say whatever happened that night, I was proud to be a part of it." The police beat a white, masculine-presenting person assigned female at birth. And when this person cried out in pain, when they said, "Do something, do something," their comrades at the Stonewall Inn did do something. Those people standing on the sidewalk responded and pulled the police off of them. That night, in fact, in response to the anger of the protesters, the police ended up barricading themselves inside the Stonewall Inn. However, as the uprising continued over days and nights, the protesters were mostly nonviolent. Rather, they used street theater and campy humor to make fun of the police, to mock them, and to make fun of their inability to control the crowd. This protest was led largely by street kids, as they called themselves, of various races, who lived at the edges of society, sometimes doing sex work, sometimes finding other means to keep body and soul together. They were young and they were agile, and they knew the streets and alleys of Greenwich Village. Night after night, they eluded the police. Lucian Prescott, a Village Voice reporter, said about them, "The police weren't going to allow them to go into the club to dance, so they were going to dance in the street, and that's what they did." Prescott also noted that when the uprising turned violent, it was in response to police-initiated violence. Thanks to people like Prescott, other people learned about the uprising even as it was happening, so more and more folks came each night. Virginia Apuzzo, a white lesbian who was then a 26-year-old Roman Catholic religious sister, read about the first couple of nights of the riots, in quotes, riots. She wrote with great emotion, "Here I thought I was the only one. I thought I was all alone. And when the newspaper identified what sounded like a public group of people, it was as if suddenly a brick wall opened up." She went on to say, "When I found that I was living a lie, I waited for someone to whisper the truth so I could give up that lie. That's so much of how I saw and experienced Stonewall. You wait for someone to whisper the truth so you can give up the lie." And this longing for the truth that Apuzzo names the yearning to give up the lie of the closet is the truth that the Stonewall Uprising reveals. It was the Stonewall Uprising, though few knew it at the time, that would blow the closet door off of United States gay and ultimately LGBTQIA movements and history. It made pride possible. Stonewall made pride possible because the rebellion told people, you can give up the lie too. It's true that Carl Schlegel, a German immigrant, founded the first gay organization in the United States 3 decades before Stonewall. It is true that the Mattachine Society, a group for gay men, founded on the idea that gay people could be upright citizens just like everybody else, had been in existence since the 50s. And yes, Del Martin and Phyllis Lyons, 2 white lesbians, founded the Daughters of Bilitis around the same time as the Mattachine Society, and their newsletters came wrapped in brown paper. These organizations are tremendously important to the history of especially gay and lesbian people. They were also founded on the idea that queer people, they wouldn't have used that word, could be just like anybody else, that we were just as respectable, just as appropriate, just as safe as anyone else. In fact, they prohibited the disreputable, the inappropriate, the outrageous, the out there, the seemingly unsafe people from participating in their activities. But the Stonewall Rebellion claimed otherwise. Stonewall is the birth of contemporary LGBTQIA pride movements because it claimed otherwise. The commemoration of Stonewall says, we don't have to be respectable. We don't have to be appropriate. We don't have to be safe or seem safe or look safe in order to claim our dignity, joy, and liberation. And those words, dignity, joy, and liberation, are what the writer and community organizer Adrienne Marie Brown reminds those of us in positions of struggle we must claim. We must claim joy, dignity, and liberation. Talk about joy and liberation. Those kids, and I call them kids because they were like 16 to 19 years old, and they led the crowd night after night. They were literally dancing in the streets in proud defiance of all that the larger culture had to say about them. They let Prescott take a picture of them, the one that was in our slideshow, because they were proud to be there defending themselves, their rights, and their bodies night after night. They went back to confront the cops with the razor-sharp weapon of the fairies, the faggots, the femmes, and all the queers I have known who brought me up, using all those awful, hurtful words and turning them on their heads. Cutting, mocking, truth-telling humor, humor that takes the bullying we have known all queer people in one way or another from out there or from in here or both, and they turned it on its head. It is the queers like them that gave me my second birth into life as a baby dyke with a shaved head and a leather jacket, and one who now looks, minus the purple hair and a few stray gray hairs, looks mostly just like a nice, fat, middle-aged lesbian lady living with her wife and 2 cats in the suburbs. But I don't forget where I came from. I remember my own leather jacket and what it meant to me, but I also remember whom I have to thank. Let us remember where queer pride came from. Remember the power of youth to have clarity and energy and courage. And remember, as people pulled down the statues of oppressive leaders and demand better of our public safety officials, that the current struggle is necessary if we want what Douglas calls progress, and what in this context I'd call pride. If we want pride, we've got to have struggle. It is struggle that teaches us that we can be beaten down and get up again and again and win through. We get pride from the struggle, and then it is pride that teaches us the struggle was worth it to begin with. It won't bring back lives lost or heal broken ones, but it can teach us, those of us who can engage in the struggle, that we are worth it, all of us, every single one, every black one, every little bitty one who was assigned a gender at birth that they know was not the right one from the time they're five, every lesbian one, every asexual one. We are all worth dismantling myths of supremacy, and we are all worth joy, dignity, and liberation. If we're going to struggle, let's remember how much we do have to be proud of. Let us follow in the dancing footsteps of those sweet young things who led the way at the Stonewall Uprising. Dance at the edges of despair. Sing as we demand a better world. One way or another, may you be blessed with pride this month. Pride to sustain you. Pride to remind you of the blessed and blessing truth that you are a human being worthy of dignity, joy, and liberation, a child of earth and of starry heaven. Dear friends, as in all things in the household of earth, we embrace for a while and then let go. As we find joy even at the edges of despair, at the edges of danger, let us remember who we are in our hearts, where we are strong, where we are peaceful, where we are centered, where we are grounded on this good earth. Let us remember who we are and who it is we hope to become. So do go in peace and return in love. Blessed be.